Hello, sports fans, and welcome to the latest installment of the UConn Pod.
This is Amon Kidwai, manager of the UConn blog, and I'm here with Timmy Fontenot and Elon DiCarlo. What's up, guys?
Amon, how's it going?
What's up, Amon? How are we?
We're doing well. We're doing well. We thought it's been a long off season, and might be time to run through a couple topics in the UConn basketball world. Interesting list came out earlier this week naming the top 100 players in college basketball. Gets very, very widely circulated, and only one UConn player made the list, and actually it was the only player in the American, Daniel Hamilton. What did he come in at, Tim?
Came in at number 26 on this list of the 50 best players.
And how do we feel about that?
I think 26 is a fair number for Hamilton. After watching him really develop as a strong overall player last season, in his freshman season at that, you know, he really took off as the second half of the year, and he was trusted with more and more of the offense. And putting him right in the middle of this list shows that he still has room to grow, but he's pretty close to a finished product right now at being 6'7", 6'8", and being able to do everything on the floor. My real problem with the list is him being the only player from the American listed. I think that is just shoddy journalism by Jason McIntyre at the big lead.
Yeah, I think this is probably one of the most ridiculous lists of players that I've ever read in my entire life. If you're going to have a list of the best players in college basketball, and you're not going to have Nick Moore on there, but you're going to have E.C. Matthews from Rhode Island, no offense to E.C. Matthews, good player, but you know, even someone like Dwayne Bacon, a freshman, or the other 25 freshmen that are on this list, I think like the entire top five almost is freshmen except for Chris Dunn from Providence. I don't get it. I don't understand what went into making this list. I don't understand why Nick Moore was left off. I mean, yeah, I can understand Ronnie Purvis not being in the top 50, but he's right there, and there's a bunch of freshmen thrown in ahead of him. Just seems like a really weird, confusing list that just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I have to agree on the omission of Nick Moore. Had a great year last year, has been an extraordinary player for an SMU team that's done really well in a reasonably competitive conference, continuing to see a lack of respect for the AAC from the media. I mean, this is like off-season fodder, though, and the kind of the complete purpose of an article like this is to incite this type of discussion, so you know, who knows, but I do think for Hamilton, yeah, that is a big sign of respect to what was a really, really good freshman year, and coming into this year, probably his last at UConn, you know, he can definitely exceed those expectations too. There's a lot of upside there with how his year can play out, so yeah, that's exciting to see that people are recognizing Danny Hamilton and how special of a season he could have.
Yeah, with the way the UConn team is built this year, it's going to be hard for him to put up big raw numbers necessary, but I think his caliber of play is going to be good enough to be player of the year in the American type of contention. I think he's that good of a player, and Kevin Ollie's really going to open up the offense for him and allow him to handle the ball and make more decisions like we saw towards the end of the season and into the conference tournament, especially when Boatwright went down. We saw Hamilton with the ball making plays a lot down the stretch. And I think that's a facet of the offense that should be fun to explore.
Yeah, I think this team is going to have a lot of pieces that are going to play a big role, have a lot of impact, so numbers are going to kind of get spread around, but Hamilton really just has that ability to explode, really stand out and make a huge difference. I think once you get into March again, you're going to see a guy who's going to be ready to take over and show what he would have done had we been able to get into the NCAA tournament last year.
And one last thing about the list. I tweeted the link out yesterday, and I made a comment saying if there was a round-robin tournament, one-on-one tournament, with all the guards on this list, and Ronnie Purvis was in it, and you put him in the field, Ronnie Purvis is making a deep run in that tournament. Personally, I just want to see Ronnie Purvis play Ryan Arcidiacono from Villanova one-on-one and still see if Jason McIntyre thinks Arcidiacono is better. Really that simple. Ronnie Purvis, explosive athlete, really got lost in the mix for about half the season, playing in Ryan Boatwright's shadow, but the kid can flat out play basketball. He's one of the top 50 players in America, no question.
And as much as I complained about the freshmen, the amount of freshmen on this list, I'd have to say I wouldn't be surprised with Rodney Purvis getting to the final in that tournament, but the way he just played at the Pan Am Games, I would be putting money on Jamal Murray. Not going to lie.
Jamal Murray can play.
Yeah.
He can really play. Oh, God.
Speaking of Rodney Purvis and how we're kind of hoping for some improvement or consistency, more consistency from him this year, might be a good way to start our conversation about our expectations for the basketball team this year. Last year, obviously, the Huskies missed the tournament. A couple of guys left the team, Rakeem Lubin, Terrence Samuel, Ryan Boatwright, of course, moves on. But really adding some players who fill a lot of the holes that UConn's team had last year. There's Sean Miller coming in, who's going to give us an immediate offensive threat in the low post and a good rebounder and a smart player. And then Sterling Gibbs, who can come in and kind of fill that point guard role, which is great for a number of reasons. He's a very good, very experienced player. And then you also get Jalen Adams doesn't really necessarily have to be thrown into the fire. He can come in as a sixth man, kind of energy guy off the bench. So the team improved a lot this offseason. And Tim put some pretty strong words down about his expectations. So why don't we let you expound and build upon some of those thoughts that you shared with us last week?
You mean how UConn's going to win the national championship?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah, UConn's going to win the national championship. Look, it's the thing with UConn is we never go into a season saying UConn's going to win the national championship because it's only happened one time where they've realistically been the favorite to win the title and they go all the way to win it. That was 04. I guess you could say 99, they were right up there. But I don't know, it's just one of those things where UConn never has to be the most talented team in the country. Obviously, Kentucky and Duke and even, I guess, Maryland people think are going to be really good because they got Melo Trimble and Diamond Stone and all those guys. But UConn just, you know, flies under the radar, comes in, wins a national championship. It's what they do, especially after a bad season like last year. The last couple titles have come after seasons that really didn't amount to much. I mean, the 12-13 season I still think is one of the best of all time because they needed to perform well in order to keep that momentum going into the next season with the tournament ban and all the guys leaving. But, you know, last year they looked like crap for most of the year, let's be honest. They looked absolutely horrendous. And you get into March and things start to get a little hot, but it comes down to that game against SMU and they end up missing out. But I think this is the best UConn team we've had since probably the 08-09 season. Maybe even farther than that. I think they're the most talented we've had. I think they're going to be one of the most together we've had. Last year there was no chemistry. This year I feel like there's a lot more going on there than people would expect after last season's debacle. And I think one of the things that's going to help is, you know, like you said, Lubin and Terrence Samuel are gone, and instead of, you know, you lose two players and you gain three or four back that are going to make a huge impact right away. And then even with Ryan Boatwright leaving, you've still got enough talent there where you're still better than last year. And I think part of the problem last year was Boatwright. He's a great player, but everything was, let's do this for Boatwright, let's win for Boatwright, even down at the end when he got hurt against SMU. These guys are probably thinking to themselves, why don't we just play for UConn and win for UConn and win for ourselves? So I think with that distraction gone, there's going to be a lot more togetherness on this team, and you know, it's built like a UConn team that's primed to win a championship.
Well, that is a scorching hot take, projecting UConn as a national champion. I just really want to get to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, and I think that's a reasonable expectation to set for this team. What I'm most excited about is not just the raw talent on this team, which I think is overflowing, but the depth that this team has. We're going to be able to go 8-9 deep most nights, and I think it's going to be fun to see Kevin Ollie try and balance that. We haven't really seen him work with a team this deep in his young career. You know, most years he's gotten to rely on playmaking abilities of senior guards like Shabazz Napier and Ryan Boatwright. But now we get to see Kevin Ollie with a challenge with lots of different players, lots of different types of players, and see what he comes up with. I think this could be a big season for him on the bench, and it could be a big season for the players on the court. This could be a fun one.
Yeah, you know, Tim, you said most UConn national championships aren't predicted. It actually is in writing on the UConn blog where I predicted the 2014 national championship before the season started. But that's neither here nor there. Talking about expectations for this season, I want to see, this is kind of a little bit different, but I really want to see us win the American Athletic Conference.
Yeah.
I want to see us beat Houston in Houston.
That's important.
Priority.
And then, I mean, the past 2 years, obviously, again, 2014 national champions, but what, we finished fifth, I think, in the conference in the regular season, and then we made the final, and then this really past year...
made the final, let's be honest.
Yeah, and then, yeah, wow. And then this year we made the final again after, again, a sixth place finish. So
again, probably got really lucky to make that final, let's be honest.
I don't know how we beat Tulsa, but I don't still don't
yeah,
know how
that was.
But yeah, you know, I'd like to see us win the American. I think people are still expecting SMU to be the top dog in the conference, and I really think this UConn team is gonna blow the waters out of the American, hopefully, in a way that they haven't before. And then NCAA tournament, yeah. I mean, I'm thinking Elite Eight right now. It's hard. It's hard to win a national championship.
It is.
It's really hard. But I really like the new additions to the team. I think they come in and fit with the other guys really well. There's a good core with Purvis and Hamilton and Brima, and then Gibbs and Miller, and then, like you said, Elon, really good depth too with Facey, Nolan, Omar Calhoun. You know, Omar Calhoun can be a very strong contributor for us next year.
It's so, gonna be fun.
But depth has definitely hurt us the past 2 years. So it will be good to see a team that has options. You know, particularly across a long season, particularly across a season where we play Tulane and ECU and some other guys who are of a very low caliber a lot. I mean, the schedule, the non-conference schedule came out. I guess, Tim, as you got to take a look at that, there were definitely still too many crappy teams on that list, right?
Yeah, there were the non-conference is terrible, just to put it bluntly. When you look at those weakest teams that UConn has to go up against, you know, Furman, that game they had no control over, and that was a package deal with the Atlantis tournament. That's like one of those opening round games or whatever. Then you've got UMass Lowell, Central Connecticut, and Maine, who, when you look at last year's KenPom rankings, were 311th, 341st, and 345th out of 351. And those are all New England teams, and we all know there are plenty of New England Division I basketball teams. There are plenty of other teams they could have scheduled against. I still want to see the UConn-Rhode Island game. I don't understand why that's not a thing yet. I want to see that because guess what? Rhode Island's a really good basketball team. Rhode Island's going to win the Atlantic 10 this year. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament right along with UConn. Why can't we have that game? That's all I want to know, UConn. Why can't we have that game?
We probably want to be the premier basketball public school in New England.
Yes, yeah, probably we're having a great rivalry.
Probably the reason.
They're probably, I don't want to say scared to play Rhode Island, because I don't think UConn's afraid to play, to schedule anybody, but if we legitimize Rhode Island if we get upset by them as a New England power, which, you know, I don't necessarily agree with, but I'm throwing out a hot take.
Well, we lost to Yale last year, so.
Oh, God. That game.
I don't know if you remember that.
Wait, wasn't that game was, I think that game finished 45-44.
Yeah, that was one of the worst games I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, just not just basketball, not just UConn, just like sporting events.
Yeah.
That was a horrible, miserable hour and a half, 2 hours.
And it was like 3 days after Texas too, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are really down on the non-conference schedule. We get Maryland, national championship contender. Ohio State's always fun to play against. I have buddies that go there. It's going to be fun when we beat them and I get to rub it in their face. We get to give it back to Texas right before New Year. And then Georgetown comes to Connecticut. How much fun is that going to be? I miss the Big East as much as anybody. We get to see John Thompson. We get to see the Hoyas. Hopefully they bring the Bulldog. We get Bulldog versus Huskies. We'll have a really good time with that game. So, you know, I found a silver lining.
Yeah, I mean, the top of the schedule, like, when you, you know, when you look at the strength of it, top to bottom, the top is really great. I mean, I'm excited for all those games. The Maryland games at the Garden, that's going to be a big one, a nice home game in New York. You know, then we have the battle for Atlantis, where it's a lot of good teams, with the exception of probably Charlotte. I mean, but even as a UConn sports fan, I've learned that Charlotte can cause a few problems. I don't want to talk about soccer anymore. But, yeah, there's a lot of great games in Atlantis that we can have. We can have Syracuse. I mean, I personally would love to play Syracuse. I don't know about any other UConn fans. Gonzaga's in there. UConn-Gonzaga's always a great game. So, yeah.
It has the potential to be big.
But the problem is the RPI is that you can still play slightly less crappy teams and still have a virtually guaranteed win, and your RPI is much, much better. That's the issue. You know, it's we don't want, I mean, again, Furman is fine, but we don't need three other teams in the 340s to be on the schedule. Even if it was a 250, it would make a significant difference in the RPI, which, given our situation in the American Athletic Conference, we need to be working on as hard as possible.
Well, the bright side in the American Athletic Conference is that no matter what you do, you could play 10 non-conference games against the 10 best teams in the country, and it would still only be a three-big conference at best.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not really worried about RPI with this team. I think they're going to be good enough. Yeah, like I think they're going to be fine where it doesn't make a difference. It's really just going to be the difference between getting a 2 seed and getting a 4 seed.
Yeah. Just can't be getting tripped up against those teams like last year. And
yeah.
I think, you know, we were talking about the roster earlier, and I think they kind of go hand in hand where, you know, last year we thought they were going to be pretty deep too, and we just – guys didn't perform. You know, everyone was high on Sam Cassell after the exhibition games. Omar Calhoun was supposed to come back hot. Yep, oh, I was on both those wagons along. It's true. You know, Rodney Purvis wasn't really himself at the start of the year and got cold a couple times late. So, you know, they're deeper now. They just need guys to step up and perform.
They're deeper with proven commodities. Like Sterling Gibbs and Sean Miller both put up numbers in their careers at Seton Hall and Cornell, respectively. And personally, I'm still waiting for the one game that Sam Cassell wins by himself with 6 made threes. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Watch it. It's going to happen against Georgetown or somebody.
If there's a stretch this year where Omar Calhoun does what Jamal Coons McDaniels did a couple years ago and has those 3 straight 20-point games, we're guaranteed to win the national championship because Omar coming.
So, coming off of the what will be the 2016 Men's Basketball National Championship, we've got a 2016 incoming recruiting class to talk about. First commitment rolled in May with Mamadou Diarra, who plays at Putnam Science Academy and is teammates with a very highly sought-after UConn target, Hamidou Diallo, class of 2017, who recently moved into the top 20 in everyone's rankings in the class. Then we added Alterik Gilbert on the 4th of July. Terry Larrier, the transfer coming in from VCU, a top 50 player from the class of 2013 or 2014? Yeah, Larrier was 2014. So we added Terry Larrier, Mamadou Diarra, and Alterik Gilbert, playmaking point guard, very much in the mold of the UConn kind of undersized lead guard. It's supposed to be a pretty big recruiting class, relatively speaking. You know, we're looking at adding 5 or 6 guys. What's been interesting for me is to start following it very closely and see that a lot of these guys who UConn is offering start to get a lot of serious national interest, and then you see kind of explosive rises for all of them. I mean, you can even go back to Steve Enoch last year as someone who, UConn was just in there first on, stock just starts rising, you know, to where he's a four-star, you know, top 100 recruit. And then we're seeing it again now with Hamidou Diallo. And then Wenyen Gabriel, another class of 2016 prospect who really not many others besides UConn were on. And then Maryland got involved, Virginia got involved, and then as of recently, Duke, Kansas, and Kentucky all put in offers for the guy. So we're definitely going after some talented players, and hopefully there's some value in Kevin Ollie and him getting in there early, and building relationships with these kids and just being widely, widely loved in the world of basketball. But Tim, when you think about filling out the rest of the class of 2016, maybe some of the recent offers that you've seen come through, who are we looking at, or what's your outlook for the class of 2016?
Well, if we get Gabriel, it's huge, but I think another guy we need to talk about who is kind of on that same line where UConn was in there first and now it's starting to pick up a little bit would be Gorjak Gak, the kid who was born in Egypt to South Sudanese parents, went to Australia, now he's in Florida, and he's on the rise. He's, I believe he's top 100 on ESPN now. He's definitely in Rivals, on Rivals radar. But UConn was the first to offer him back in May. And when I talked to him, there was interest from some other teams, but not really any offers on the horizon. Last couple of days, he's gotten Tulsa and Missouri. From what I understand, Oregon State is in there. Texas, I believe, has shown some interest. So it's starting to pick up a little bit in the way it picked up for Steve Enoch. I don't know if we'll see that meteoric rise soon. He did have some good camps over the summer, but he's a confident guy when I talk to him. He's a 6'11 power forward. He said that his favorite player is Anthony Davis, and he models his game after Anthony Davis. So I just imagine this, you know, college version, kind of scaled down, obviously, of Anthony Davis showing back up at UConn and going nuts, and that would be fine by me.
Yeah, the future's bright with this program. As much as people want to bury it for being in the American, Kevin Ollie is just, on the recruiting trail especially, is just really a weapon that most programs just don't have. And also, with the amount of depth we were talking about, we all forgot to mention Steve Enoch. The kid can play. Like, Steve is going to contribute in limited minutes. He's probably not going to play more than, like, 8 to 10 minutes the first couple weeks of the season. But I think with his size, the way he uses his size, his rebounding instincts, he's going to be able to get on the floor for extended periods of time. And to continue, I saw Diarra and Diallo at the Mary Klein Classic a couple months ago, and those guys have a chemistry built from playing together in high school that I would love to see continue at the next level. And they have really fun names to say, Hamidou and Mamadou. The student section and stores would love chanting those names, and if they came to Gamble, they would really feel the love there, and once they do, they would never leave.
I agree with that. I think you pointed out the American, and I do want to say that with the American Athletic Conference, you know, these smaller teams that are coming in and they're playing better competition than they've ever played before, you're seeing results in their recruiting. You know, looking back at it, even just a couple weeks ago, I think Tulane a couple years ago, if they got a two-star player, that was cause for celebration. Now these are teams that they have the potential to bring in 3-4-star players. You know, with Tulane, USF, and even East Carolina, I guess, is going to be somewhat okay if they ever get out of that D1 independent range. But
you're reaching.
I mean, you can just go straight to SMU. I mean, they were not – the move to the American has been incredible for them. They're getting much, much better players. You know,
I think it has more to do with illegal recruiting that Larry Brown is into.
Yeah.
Your take is okay.
I mean, Emmanuel Mudiay had a great season at SMU. So.
I'm not saying anything about the reason why it's happening, but there are good players coming in there. And I don't think those players, despite whatever shady stuff was going on, would go play for SMU if they were in Conference USA. despite whatever stuff might be going down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's one of those things where people are going to sleep a little bit on Terry Larrier and not think of him as part of that 2016 recruiting class, but you really have to. You just have to. He's a new player on the team. So then you look at it and you've got Larrier. So we're trying to think, who's going to leave the team? We're thinking probably Hamilton.
I'd say Hamilton, definitely. Purvis, maybe.
Purvis,
I Amita could leave.
Maybe, too. I could see Brima if he had a really good year.
And then you lose Gibbs and Miller.
And then Gibbs and Miller are gone. So there's going to be a lot to replace on that team. Omar Calhoun will be gone.
Oh, damn it. And Phil Nolan.
We need Phil Nolan around forever.
So we're going to have to replace Phil Nolan. I think hopeful Mamadou Diarra can slide into that role capably. But anyway, we're adding Larrier, a small forward, a very good player. You know, a guy who will be going up against heightened competition in practice, according to him. We'll add Mamadou Diarra, who to me strikes me as a four-year player, which I love. I'm all about that. You know, just a four-year guy with a hard motor, who can rebound and do some dirty work down there. Al-Tariq Gilbert, playmaking point guard, absolutely explosive, dynamic player. So it's looking pretty good right now, but I think people still want to see like a higher profile or a high-rated big man added to the class, since we're probably looking at Brima leaving, since we're since Phil Nolan's leaving. We'll have some power forwards in Facey and Enoch, but we won't exactly have a center. So
Enoch's big enough to play center.
Okay.
He's a legit 6'10", 6'11", and he's huge.
Yeah.
He's like double the size of Brima width-wise. You know, with the way the game's moving, at least at the pro level, you really don't need two big guys on the floor. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the team and how they flesh out the rest of the roster. But just projecting now, I could see Enoch playing center in a year.
Really? That's interesting. I thought he had been developing
more of
like an outside game as like a shooter. That's what he's...
Hopefully we hit stretch five. We'll just play five out.
Stretch five. Oh my goodness.
I mean, Kevin Ollie would have to show a level of creativity unbeknownst to him so far, but...
It's Kevin Ollie.
Anything can happen.
Well, I think some of his creativity last year was limited potentially by...
Yeah, fair.
The actual team and pieces that he had, because I think the 2014 team showed a lot of, you know, pretty advanced stuff, and you know, because they had a lot of experienced, smart players, Shabazz, DeAndre Daniels, Giffey, Lawson Chroma, you know.
Tyler Olander. Two-time champion.
Yes.
Tyler Olander. Show the man some respect.
And he hit the game winner against Maryland. He hit the
guy the best.
That started the whole season. That was huge.
So we lose that game against Maryland. That's a big blow. That would be a huge blow. We were winning big. And Tyler Olander, and he's I think with this year's team, he can do some of those things that we were yelling during games, do this. I'm sure Kevin Ollie, if he could respond, would be like, yeah, I would love to do that, but I can't.
But Kenton Facey cannot leave the post ever. He just can't do it.
Kevin Ollie's a good enough coach where he can win a national championship with Phil Nolan as his starting center. He can do anything he wants.
Speaking of that national championship team, Shabazz Napier got traded, guys.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
I mean,
not too far.
It's obviously.
Yeah, he's just moving up in the state of Florida.
Yeah.
But I think so. He's gonna get more minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the Heat obviously so clearly took him to try and appeal to to LeBron, and that would have been so awesome to see Shabazz playing with LeBron, because obviously we know how he can help a player elevate his profile, see Dellavedova, you know. That whole time Dellavedova's, and I'm thinking, God, that should have been Shabazz. And also, why don't the Cavs trade for Shabazz? But yeah, anyway, it's obviously he'll have some more opportunities in Orlando. He definitely didn't get a full shake in Miami. He's a smart player. There's some pretty good guys in that Orlando backcourt, though, right?
Yeah, he's not going to start, but you know, he's going to be behind Elfrid Payton and Victor Oladipo down there. But you know, he's going to get a chance to play on a team that's building something for the future, and he's going to be able to be a part of that, hopefully. Whereas in Miami, they're clearly still trying to go for the title right now. And within this year and the next year, there's a lot of reports that they're trying to get Kevin Durant to sign a max contract there. So I see how Shabazz didn't really fit into the plans with the Heat. But hopefully with the Magic, he can be in on the ground floor and see that team rise from the cellar and hopefully into the lower half of the playoffs, which I think they're good enough to get into this year.
Yeah, and I mean, Shabazz is never, you know, you look at him, he was never going to be an NBA starter, or he never really looks like he was going to fit that mold. He was always going to come off the bench. But I'm excited for him. You know, last year was kind of tough going between Miami and Sioux Falls all the time, so hopefully that's not the case this year in Orlando. And, you know, from my lack of NBA knowledge, I will say that I know Shabazz likes his soccer, and he's going to a place that, you know, they got a pretty good soccer team. So oh my God, he's going to have a lot of fun down there, and he's closer to Disney. And so those are the things I know about. I think he's going to have a good time.
Yeah, because it's every 23-year-old man's dream to leave Miami to go to Disney.
I actually made a trip to Disney World as an adult.
Yeah.
I've done Disney World as an adult somewhat recently. Don't sleep on that experience. It's
Yeah, I'll go to South Beach. You guys go hang out with Mickey. That's fine.
I mean, personally, I'd go to Epcot and drink around the world before I go to South Beach, but that's just me.
To each his own.
To each his own, indeed. So what are we talking here? We're talking backup point guard, third point guard?
I just think he's going to get like 18 minutes a night. I just know that Elfrid Payton is pretty entrenched in that role. They picked him in the lottery. And Oladipo, yeah. I just think Orlando just got him for, I don't want to call him a veteran because it's only his second year, but I mean, the guy's played mm-hmm. 4 years at UConn, heady player, winning player. I just think he can help.
All right. All right. Yeah, I mean, 18 minutes a game, that sounds awesome. That sounds great if that's what the outlook is.
I see what other guards they even have on the roster.
They don't have Ben Gordon anymore.
That's true.
But Ben Gordon is vegan, so.
Yeah, good for Ben Gordon. The guy's trying to hang around the league. I hope he gets another contract. It's always fun when UConn guys are still around.
You know, the UConn guys, they do seem to, even if they're not like superstars, the guys who you know, had kind of disappointing NBA careers, so to speak, they do seem to hang around, right? We've got Villanueva.
Charlie's still around. Rip is still around. No, Rip retired.
We got AJ Price hanging around. We got Jeff Adrian hanging around.
Wait, did you guys see the Summer League story where Hashim got thrown out of the game, got hit with double technicals in like a minute?
And then was going crazy in the locker room, breaking chairs and stuff.
Oh, that's amazing.
That was the best Summer League story.
My big UConn in the NBA question is, we're talking about those veterans who have managed to stay around. Where's Hilton Armstrong? Was a solid role player on the Hornets. Well, I don't know about solid. I know that I personally loved him at UConn, so I'm going to say he was solid for the Hornets. Then he ended up, I think, in Indiana or something like that, and now he's just completely disappeared.
Well, I mean, now he just gets replaced by a 20-year-old kid that can do what he does.
Well, yeah.
But for much cheaper.
Whatever.
Facts of the business. And, you know, Ryan Boatwright got picked up by Brooklyn. It looks like he's going to stick around there. They shipped out Deron Williams. Hopefully Boat can impress some people in training camp and maybe get some minutes. The future of UConn basketball is bright. Even when Canale's on the recruiting trail, he can show that he gets guys to the pros and they stick. Hopefully DeAndre gets there in a year or two after being exiled in Australia. I think he's still in Australia.
And yeah, didn't he get injured recently?
Yeah, he just had surgery. I don't know what he had surgery.
Surgery, but I think he's going back to Australia.
All right, so let's end the podcast with this question then. We briefly touched on it earlier, but let's put a guess out here. Which players are declaring for the NBA, UConn players, are declaring for the NBA draft, the 2016 NBA draft?
Okay, I was trying to steal. Okay, I think Purvis is gone. Hamilton's gone, Brima's gone, and then Miller and Gibbs because of eligibility.
Okay, well, we're talking about people who are going to declare, so that's...
Okay, so Purvis, Hamilton, and Brima.
All right, I'm going to say Purvis and Hamilton, and I'm on the fence about Brima. I think if he can learn what a defensive rebound is, then, yeah, maybe we'll talk about it.
Well, this is his third year at UConn, so hopefully we can get that point across. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's very clear to all of us that Hamilton, this is probably his last year at UConn. And then I really don't think Purvis is going, to be honest with you. And I think Brima goes. I think Brima will average a double-double with a high block number and, you know, be a lottery pick. And, you know, he's 7 feet tall, crazy athletic, and... I think it's Brima and Hamilton declaring early.
Do you think they're both lottery picks?
I mean in this alternative scenario where Brima declares, I think he's doing so, yeah, and that he's a lottery pick. And then Hamilton as well, yeah.
I think that asking for a double double out of Brima this year is a lot, considering
he's more likely to do it with blocks than with rebounds.
Yeah, I'd say the realistic stat line for him would probably be something like 15 and 7.5, something like that.
He's not scoring 15 a game. No way.
We'll call it close to a double-double.
Not that many shots to go around.
We'll call it close to a double-double.
Have that one game like against Coppin State where he goes for 40-plus, and it'll just skew his average for the rest of the season.
And they talk about it all season long.
He'll have a game where he doesn't score a basket. That's happened before. It'll happen again.
It'll be against UCF, though. Have you seen the size of UCF's bigs?
Taco?
Taco Fall?
Mercy. Taco, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Wait, is the huge...
They still have Justin McBride as well, yeah. 300.
They've got Justin McBride and they've got Taco.
He's the big. McBride is the best.
I love that guy. And he's such a nice guy, too.
Yeah.
In the middle of the game in the American Athletic Conference tournament, I'm sitting next to my buddy, and he says something to McBride while someone's on the foul line, and McBride just looks over and smiles and wants to start a conversation. Like, you got a tournament game to play, bro.
Yeah, but UCF.
Yeah, well, they lost East Carolina that day, so. We spent all this time making fun of East Carolina, but, you know, they got to the second round. UCF didn't, and why don't we make fun of UCF more? Civil conflict.
Should the civil conflict extend to the basketball court?
No. Yeah. No. They don't admit that it's a thing. Why should we?
That's not a bad give and get, maybe.
We're going to let Taco decide.
Let's not even talk about
If you start talking about football, I'm hanging up the phone. I'm out.
I'll just say October 10th. That's it.
That sounds about right. What's October 10th, Tim? The start of soccer season?
No, October 10th is Civil
Patrol.
Conflict.
Goal Patrol.
Is what?
Civil Conflict.
Civil Conflict.
You're the one who's supposed to be sending me down there.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot. I forgot about the exact date, but now I'll never forget.
10-10.
And that's going to do it for us today with the UConn Pod. For Elon DiCarlo and Tim Fontenot, this is Amon Kidwai. Thank you for listening.